We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to
know. I'ma tell you. Fourth quarter of the program begins right now as we finish strong here on a Wednesday. We're going to talk some Chiefs football with Seth Kaiser. We're going to hear from camp here in just a moment. Also, some other baseball news, NFL news, all the things you need to know, like do you know your rights? If you have criminal charges pending and need help defending your rights, contact the lawman at Jungle Law. They cover it all from DUIs to federal charges. Go to junglelaw.com today. Let's start up in camp with a little Chiefs conversation. We begin with Andy Reid asked about, you know, the left tackle spot. Orlando Brown's not there. Roderick Johnson was playing left tackle today. Reid was asked why Johnson was at left tackle today.
I thought he was productive in the offseason, and so coming in, we thought he could help out there. So I mean, we'll just see how it rolls.
Your guy there for the time being, or are you
going to
rotate some other guys?
We're going to keep rotating them in. So until nothing's solidified there.
You talked about Tumi. Are we going to see him at left tackle anytime soon?
Probably not right now.
That's a wealth of information from Andy Reid, by the way, compared to
what do you normally get?
Days, right? Like, probably not right now. Well, wow. Thanks for being so forward.
Yeah, I'll get that to you is what you often
Yeah. That's the usual one that we get. They're going to look at all of them. To me, the biggest thing, and we said this earlier today, the biggest thing is when does Joe Tooney move out there? That's how long they think Joe Tooney needs to get ready for left tackle. Mm-hmm. And I think their hope and their expectation probably is that they won't actually have to get to that because Orlando Brown will come in time to get ready for the season. But we get to maybe, I'm guessing, two and a half weeks out. And Orlando Brown has not returned. I think you start seeing, and that's also when they're at home in Kansas City and no cameras and all those different kind of things. They can kind of keep that under wraps a little bit going into that first game with the Cardinals. But I would think it's in the last 2 weeks that they would move Joe Tooney over there.
And I also don't necessarily expect it to be they don't know when he's going to be there and all of a sudden he's there the next day. Wouldn't there be a situation where he says, okay, here's the situation. It's Tuesday. I'm coming in. I'll be in Thursday or whatever. Or do you think he just all of a sudden they wake up in the morning, oh, crap, Orlando Brown's here. Interesting.
I don't know. That's a good question. How does it work? Do you guys actually have communications?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I'm sure the agent, you know, maybe Brett Veach is like, hey, by the way, your guy got an idea, got a time frame on when he's going to be in? Or the agent call. Yeah, maybe the agent would call and say, listen, he's planning on this date.
Yeah.
If Todd ever quits being a shock jock, he could ask that question.
That's true. That's true. Maybe we'll get to the bottom of it, find out. A lot of young guys, a lot of defensive draft picks this year, young players all over the defensive side of the ball. Andy Reid today asked what advice he had for those young defensive players.
I told him don't count the numbers in the lines. Brett's done a nice job of bringing a lot of people in here that are good players. So don't get caught up in that. Just go play. And then we'll make the decision, make it as hard as you can on us. And so you have an opportunity to make a play or have a rep, take advantage of that. And that's kind of where we're at today. We got guys that, there might be some guys that are working with twos and threes that end up playing for us and making the team.
Probably not.
Let me give you the reality. Unlikely. But.
Yeah, that sounds good. Sounds good. But reality, they got a pretty good idea who's going to be on this team.
Yeah.
There's out of 53 spots, there's five maybe that are up for grabs.
Teams this good don't have a lot of jobs up for grabs. Yeah.
Now, listen, to his point, maybe you come in and knock their socks off. Maybe you wedge your way in there. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of the decision-making is made off their actual game tape that they've put together before this, either for other NFL teams or their college teams, supplemented by what they do in the preseason games. But
Have you ever been able to get from people in the know, even unofficially, how many of the 53 would not have made it at the beginning of this game? How many won their job or lost their job strictly based on what happened between the opening of camp and the and the final cut down. I can't be very many.
No, in fact, maybe I'll do that for tomorrow. I'll have my list of how many guys are already on this team and how many spots are open.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and to Curtis's point, prior to me getting to the show, I mean, you guys openly celebrated the transition of the Chiefs going from a team that acquired other teams' training camp cuts to the Chiefs being the team that has to cut teams that then gets picked up by other teams.
Yeah, it's that's, you know, it's celebrating all the guys they grab off waiver wires. I mean, that's fine, yeah, it's a process you want to get beyond.
Yes,
other teams need to be grabbing your guys.
It's making the best of a situation you don't want to be in.
Yeah, skill position players. Andy Reid talking about that today was asked about those players, the skill position players, and what he's seeing there on day one.
The more reps they get, the better. So we'll just keep working. It looked like they hadn't fallen off from the OTAs, but things are always faster here. So, and then they'll be faster in the preseason games, and once you get in the season, it'll be faster. But I liked what I saw. We're gonna keep rolling people in, both sides of the ball, rolling people in, making sure we get the right group to be in position to be your starter.
Specifically, Mahomes to Juju today, where the line, I know the line is just taking the defense position, but just how do you see that connection kind of form very over the course of both games now in the training?
Yeah, there's a trust there. So this isn't Juju's first rodeo, right, as they'd say. So I like what we like what we saw before. He was banged up just a little bit. He had to pull in the OTAs, but, you know, he's back now. He's healthy, and it was good work today. We'll just keep building on it. First day.
Yeah.
There's something early, and then I forgot listening to the Juju. Something he had early in there that I forgot what it was.
Reps,
I was going to react to
working guys in.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was.
It's good to know I'm not the only person who does that.
Yeah, it's not his first day at the rodeo.
Yeah, Juju. I wonder if Juju's actually been to an actual rodeo.
Have you?
I have.
Really? Where?
When I was a kid. Probably down. It was Kemper. It may have been at the
American Royal Rodeo.
Yeah, that was 1974.
I've also been to the rodeo at Newton, Kansas, when I was a kid.
Sweet.
Yeah, like rodeo it. Came to town.
Bobby Goldsboro sang.
Oh, okay. Good. Alabama sang the rodeo at the Kemper at the American Royal Rodeo
when I went to it.
Yeah. Yeah, so big time. Juju Smith-Schuster, you just heard Andy Reid talking about, not his first rodeo. He was asked about being in sync with Patrick Mahomes today.
Yeah, I mean, this offseason, we've just been working out every single day. Pat stays in Dallas. You know, Pat calls, hey, you know, we're throwing these days. If you're out here, come out, make it out. And, you know, a lot of guys did that this offseason, you know, and just building that trust. And I think over the time, and you could just even see it out here, you know, Pat's making throws and, you know, I'm making those catches. And like you said, just building that chemistry, you know, going into the season.
Juju, you said a lot of guys made it down to Dallas. Could you identify who didn't? And are you willing to ridicule them for not?
You know, Reid even kind of mentioned it in passing. It was almost like a second or another OTA that those guys essentially had down there where they got to work on things that normally they wouldn't be able to work on. So I think it's something of it's a positive that, one, Patrick Mahomes says, hey, guys, let's come down and do this, and that some guys went down and did it. I'm sure it makes them better at this moment than they would have been otherwise.
Let me ask you both this. If Juju is on a multi-year contract, does he make that trip?
Good question. I mean, there is a bit of a prove-it thing to this. We were having that discussion earlier today that, you know, the outcomes with Juju Smith-Schuster, like if he has a phenomenal year, well, he's a free agent. Mm-hmm. You can win the bidding war for him, but, like, would you have been better off trying to maybe give him more money guaranteed to have him for 3 years, right? Like give him the 3 for $25 where it's really, a one-year $12 million deal. Instead of what is basically, this is about $3.9 million, I think, is what he gets, is the guaranteed portion of it. Can go upwards over $10 million. But would you have been willing to give him more money so that you know you've got him next year? This is very much a prove it deal for him. And if he proves it, you don't control him. Right? To me, I look at this and say, this is better than the Sammy Watkins 3 years at $48 million. right? They overpaid. And I think they did that at that time because they weren't sure about Tyreek Hill. And they felt like they needed another guy on the other side. But now I wonder if, you know, I think you'd definitely like to develop. You want Sky Moore to become the guy amongst the wideouts. Mm-hmm. And then you can grab a guy like this every year. I mean, Julio Jones was available. Juju Smith-Schuster was available. And you can just run them through one right after another. That's the hope.
1 year, 3.25.
For
Juju. 2.49 guaranteed.
Okay. Routes. The offense, new offense for Juju Smith-Schuster. Had 1,400-plus yards 1 year several years ago for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, obviously the offense is going to be a little bit different. Said he loves the variety of routes in this offense.
Yeah, I mean, this offense, man, oh, my gosh, the amount of routes I ran. I think I ran more routes here than my previous offense. And being all over the field. And like I said, being able to play inside, outside, you know, and that's just for everybody. You know, you see MBS playing inside, outside. You've seen Nico playing inside, outside. Scott, you have so many guys playing different positions, which is so nice, you know, because we can move guys around. And like I said, you know, today was just like the first taste of, you know, what I got to show.
Why is that good for you?
Just like I said, versatile. Being able to spread the ball around, being able to move guys all around the field and not being able to stay in one spot and get double team, cover team, or double team and being covered on one side, then moving to the other side or inside.
We talked about this, I think it was Monday, about the, not just having a number of guys to be in the pattern, but when they line up, the defense doesn't know, one, if the guy's going to stay where he's at, and no matter where he stops, what route is he running? That's even more important than just having a variety of people, that every single guy can do any route whenever they want to. And they may switch out of one formation, they may switch one way, and the next time that formation lines up, they may switch a completely different way. Andy Reid just has, we talked about for ad nauseum, that for every lineup, he's probably got six or seven different options off of them. They won this. Oh, then they flip this over. Obviously, he'd love to have that, and it sounds like he does right now.
Sky Moore, the youngster, the second-round pick, Juju Smith-Schuster, said he likes what he's seen from the rookie.
Man, honestly, I'll tell you one thing about that kid that I love is his happiness, man. Like, I've seen a lot of guys come to the league and, you know, so driven, so focused, and, you know, they forget about to enjoy the moment. Sky, man, he, like I said, sky's the limit for him. You know, he has a guy, you know, speed, hands, all the way around, smart, smart kid. And, you know, that's what I love about him. But like I said, with him, he's a great player. It's going to show. He's going to help us out a lot. Inside, outside, potentially I could see him playing running back, doing stuff like that, just because he got it in him. And another thing is, too, like I said, he's always happy, man. He's having fun. He's in the moment. He's enjoying himself.
Why? You had a funny look. I mean, he's a joyful guy.
No, I like the happy. I like his happiness. I do like the fact that he said sky is the limit and didn't do it unironically. I could see him playing running back. That popped off.
Yeah, that to me.
I had not heard any mention of Sky Moore playing running back.
Well, I mean, he's kind of running back size. They talk about he's got thick legs, strong legs. Yeah. He's a tackle breaker. It says to me, we talked about this in the first hour, they're going to be handing him the ball.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, Tyreek Hill in his rookie year where he was running the ball more, I think you could see a little bit of that with Sky Moore this year.
Yeah.
You know?
That, I didn't expect to hear that from a player.
Debo Samuel style stuff. Yeah. I think that's, you know, he looked at it and said, oh, I like what Debo Samuel's doing. And, like, okay, we can do that. Mm-hmm. Here, this guy can give us that kind of that kind of plan. Let's take a break. We want to talk to Seth Kaiser coming up. First, I do want to mention this, though. Actually, real quick, from the baseball side of things, Drew Jones, first of all, the second overall pick, is already hurt, right? Just picked second in the draft. You know, his first time in the batting session with the Diamondbacks got hurt. And then Mike Trout is dealing with a, quote, rare condition in his back that he likely will have to manage, quote, throughout the rest of his career. How long before they quit giving out these 10, 12, 14-year deals in baseball? How many of them have to go south? If you go look at the biggest contracts in baseball, go look at how many of them are either hurt right now or are just like, you're like, that guy's not playing at a high level anymore. It's amazing how much money is sitting and not playing. And at some point, the owners, I think, are going to wake up to the fact. One team's woken up to it. The Rays don't have any of those guys.
Nope.
And they compete every year.
I think that'll be interesting. But Mike Trout, I hope this is not something that keeps him from playing. You look at the swing. His swing is, I mean, you understand why he's got back issues. Like, it's so explosive. So explosive when he swings the bat. All right, let's take a break. Seth Kizer, the chief of the North Newsletter, he's going to join us next, talking some Chiefs football here on the program.
He's a pastor who likes the passing game, an attorney who enjoys play action more than class action, and he loves to watch Chiefs game tape for hours and hours and hours. He's Seth Kizer of The Athletic on the program.
Who wants to come to the biggest bash in Kansas City? It's on August 11th. It's at the Midland. It's our 100-year celebration of WHB. You can't buy tickets to this. Can't do it. You can't rub elbows with Daron Cherry and Jeff Montgomery and Warren Moon and Joel Goldberg. Who doesn't want to rub elbows with Joel Goldberg and find out, how do you do it? How do you get such a tan face with such a brilliant silver glow of hair? How do you do it, Joel? You can only do that if you're at the 100-year celebration on August 11th. It's the only place you're going to find it. Reports are that Mark Boerichter, right? Mm-hmm. Mark Boerichter is going to compete with Johnny Russell in a wing-eating contest. I don't know. I can't confirm it, but there are reports. There are people that are out there. Who you got, Boerichter or Johnny Russell?
I think Johnny Russell would attack it early on and have the lead, but I think Boerichter in the end, he can go the distance.
Of course, the night will be capped
He'll
off.
He'll go the full 99 yards.
The night will be capped off by Bill Self and Bill Snyder. They're going to compete in lawn darts. So that should be sick.
They're going to play
that should be sick.
Chess.
You can't buy the tickets. You can only win them. You got to call 913-3810-810. Right now, we're going to give away a pair of tickets. 913-3810-810. You can become a sponsor, and I think that'll probably get you in. I don't know, but don't quote me on that. But 913-344-1529 if you'd like to support the event. You can be one of our sponsors. They start as low as $500 and support great charities like Big Brothers Big Sisters, the Victory Project, ALS Association of Kansas City, and the Shareways Foundation. Let Stephen St. John and Dustin Colquitt be your guide to a night of frivolity and fun and lawn darts. It's all at the Midland Theater.
And bear suits.
Could be a bear suit. Who knows?
It's a bear suit, Joel.
Who knows? Let's talk with our buddy Seth Kizer. He is the best at breaking down the film. You can read his great work at The Athletic. His chief in the North Newsletter. Must subscribe if you're a Chiefs fan. Seth, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing very, very well. And I have to say, as someone who has eaten a burger with Mark, I got my money on the other guy. Mark just doesn't put it away like a big guy should.
You know, and he is a good-sized guy. Like, I've told him, the mistake that Dick Vermeil made was not trying to get him eating and lifting and make him a tight end. Right? Like, don't you think?
He's a much bigger guy than people think.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not a small kid. Right? Like, what does he say? He walks around at, like, what, 290, 295?
Probably not that much.
Not that big? Okay, I'm overestimating.
Every bit of 240.
Yeah, he's a good-sized fellow. There's no doubt about it. How are you, Seth? It's been a while.
I am doing really well. This is by far the best time of the year to live in Minnesota.
Oh,
so
yes.
Life is good. I mean, you can't beat the weather here in July.
Yeah, it is fantastic up there. I agree with that. Listen, where are your concerns for this team? What's the biggest concern you've got that they've got to answer here at training camp?
Sure. You know, the biggest concern is one that they can start to answer at training camp, but unfortunately won't be able to finish answering it, and it's that young defense. They're counting on guys like Karlaftis and McDuffie, Cook, maybe Chanel. They're counting on multiple guys to play major snaps, and that's always a flip of the coin. You know, if you can get two or three rookies that contribute in year one, you've knocked it out of the park in a draft. And they're basically, they set themselves up to where they almost need that to have a competent defense this year. So that's the biggest concern for me.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Spagnuolo has not loved, you know, throwing the rookies out there, but he has no choice this year, right?
Right. There's just not a lot of options, particularly at the corner spot. It's just, you know, if you say, well, I want to go with the veteran, and it becomes, do you? Like, what are really your options there in terms of veterans, particularly until Rashad Fenton comes back? They just don't have the bodies. And I get what they're doing. I think it was maybe a little bit even overdue, having this complete renovation and rehauling of that defensive side of the ball in terms of a youth movement. But you just don't have an option. So he's going to need to kind of, it's an adapt or die thing. He can't have the defense being too complicated for guys to figure out for the first eight games.
I love that. Adapt or die.
Sounds serious. Adapt
we're very melodramatic in July here in Minnesota.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. It's fantastic.
Sounds like a NFL. They'll either adapt or die.
Yeah. There's a the NFL. Dun 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 dun. And they died. 2-15. They were turds. Not the Chiefs. Some other team, right? I am encouraged. I like the talent on the defense. I like that it's younger and more athletic, and I think it's going to deliver a punch, right? Like, I think this team is defensively, I would not call them physical, which is fine. Like, I call them champions in 2019, so it's not about that's a fake trophy. We're the most physical defense out there. But, you know, I think the game is a physical game, and being able to play it with physicality does add an element that is a positive element to any football team. And with Reed at safety, I think he will deliver a much bigger punch. And Thornhill's he's one of the more physical guys in that secondary. But now add Reed in there over Matthew, I think he's more physical. I think Chanel, whenever he does get on the field, which I think is going to be limited, but he's going to be more physical. I think Cook is going to be more physical if he is indeed going to end up in the Daniel Sorensen role. I think he will be much more physical than Daniel Sorensen was. I think Nick Bolton being on the field every snap, as opposed to kind of in concert with Anthony Hitchens, they get more physical that way. I think that's a good thing. I think that's one of the things that you know, could add a new element. So people might hear some footsteps this year.
Absolutely. And one of the things to add is, you know, guys like Anthony Hitchens and Dan Sorensen, very physical players. The problem is, especially for Sorensen last year, but even in previous years, and really for Hitchens every year, as much as he compensated in other ways, it's tough to be physical if you're a step slow to get there, or two steps, or three steps. Mm-hmm. You can't line a guy up. In the NFL, everyone's too athletic, right? They're too good. If you don't have the angle, it doesn't matter how strong you are, how physical you are. If you don't have the angle, you are at best going to shoestring tackle someone or be dragged a couple of yards because you don't have the right angle. And that's where guys like Cook, like Justin Reed, I mean, you really do have more speed out there. And I think that's really going to help in terms of sideline to sideline stuff and even protecting the middle of the field, really.
You no doubt have looked at film on Reed. I mean, his PFF grade is not fantastic. In fact, it doesn't support giving him the contract he got. So clearly the Chiefs feel like he was being held back in Houston. Are you feeling like he's going to live up to the $10 million price tag?
I liked his film in Houston. I didn't think it was, you know, this wasn't a $15 million a year film, and I think the contract reflects that. He is a guy that showed the ability to play a variety of roles. He showed the ability to basically do a lot of the same things Tyrann Mathieu does, except line up in the slot consistently. I don't think that that's necessarily his bread and butter, but he does have good range. He plays very physically. He can line up as a box safety or a single high safety. And those are things that he can do. He combines good physicality with good speed, good closing ability. He can test the ball hard. So he's a good safety. In terms of, like you said, that $10 million a year, he's not going to quite tap out the safety market, I don't think. I do think Houston had a number of issues they were dealing with last year, and you could see him at times pressing on defense, trying to make up for a roster that around him was a little lacking, to say it in a very nice way.
Yes. Do you see Brian Cook and can Cook and Reed be a safety tandem if this is Juan Thornhill's swan song in Kansas City? Is there a little bit of position duplication? You end up with two what old school football people would call strong safeties and no free safety in that mix. Or because I know you did your breakdown of all the draft picks and everything. Do you think those two, if next year we're looking over the horizon, if next year Juan Thornhill is not back, can those two play in tandem together back there?
I think they can. I think Juan Thornhill is the best fit for a single high safety. That's kind of the league is trending a little bit away from that. Mm-hmm. Now, these things come in ebbs and flows, so I assume, you know, you're going to eventually see, oh, the return of cover three. You know, it'll be a whole thing. Both of them do have good athleticism. neither of them has shown what Thornhill at his peak has in terms of long speed, but both of them, I think, have sufficient speed to play deep safety, or single high safety, more specifically. I'm not sure it's something that I would necessarily want either of them doing full-time, but let's say they are the safety tandem, right? Let's say Juan Thornhill does walk, and they get a third safety that they're comfortable with as more, you know, the hybrid-type role guy. I think you can rotate either of them back there as long as you're not asking them to do it 40 snaps a game. So I'm comfortable with it. Neither of them have elite speed, but both of them have good speed.
We talk about the cover two and how it got thrown at the Chiefs and, you know, trying to take away Tyreek Hill and his big play. That really wasn't just being thrown at the Chiefs. Like, I've read a number of different things. Like, that defense was being thrown at everybody. That was the in vogue thing. And rushing fewer. Like, most teams, the blitz was down. People were coming with four, and then even a few teams like the Patriots, I think like 15% of the time were only bringing three. So it's become more and more a coverage, let's drop as many people. In a lot of ways, let's let them go 20 to 20. But when it gets shorter, we've got lots of people back here, and it gets hard to find a guy to throw the ball. Do you see the personnel moves that the Chiefs made? That because Steve Spagnuolo, I wouldn't have characterized. I haven't gotten far enough into my reading to see if he was trending that way as well. But my eye test says he wasn't. He's a guy that would, okay, here he comes. He's bringing it. Here comes the linebacker. Here comes the safety. You know, does this personnel that they have look like he's trending towards that, or that he is going to maybe try to be the change up? And no, we're going to be okay. Everybody else is doing that. You prep your game plan that way, but for us, we're coming at you each time. What do you think the personnel changes look like? The style he wants to play.
Sure, I don't necessarily see a huge change from what he's been trying to do, other than getting more athletic on the back end, which is something. I mean, it's not like there's any team out there that's saying, "Oh, we'd really like to be slower on the back end." I think he recognized there was a weakness on the team recognized there. When you get a guy like Chanel, who might be more of like a Sam linebacker role, think of it what, you know, they had Reggie Ragland doing a lot of in 2019. And there's a place for that. But they seem to be finding guys that they think fit these niches that they've already previously had in the defense. One thing I will say about Spagnuolo, where in high-profile situations, in high-leverage situations, he tends to send the house. I've talked to people that they say this as a joke, and I think you've heard it too, and we joke around about where people just say Spags is going to Spags. This is what he does. He's good at it. He's good at disguising looks, all that kind of stuff. But I think he's going to stay who he is. The big thing is that the best defenses he's had, whether during time stretches with the Chiefs, with the Giants, whenever, is when he is able to consistently get comfortable pressure with four, which is true of most defensive coordinators. But when he's been set up to do that, I have noticed them backing off the blitz just a little bit. An example would have been they had a stretch last year where Frank Clark he played probably his best ball as a Chief for three or four games. Ingram had come into the mix. Chris Jones was doing what he always does. And they were actually starting to get some consistent pressure. And they started blitzing a little bit less. And so I don't think you're going to see a huge – it's kind of like, you know, will Andy Reid run the ball more? Yeah, a little, maybe. But it's not going to be, I think, this massive sea change. I just don't see that from Spags.
Okay. That's interesting. Let's talk about the offensive side of the ball. We're talking to Seth Kizer, Chief in the North Newsletter, is what he produces. Great stuff. And he's got a bunch of great stuff all throughout the offseason. But as we wind up for the big season, I encourage you to get his newsletter, Chief in the North Newsletter. What do you see? What is the tinkering Andy Reid you think will do? What do you think he should do as far as tinkering with his offense this year?
Sure. I really think that you see some intentionality in terms of trying to find multiple receivers who can fill specific niches all over the field instead of just Tyreek Hill being able to line up everywhere. You know, try to still threaten the deep ball with MVS. Try to still threaten intermediate and shallow with Juju Smith-Schuster. Try to threaten with gadgetry stuff and hopefully deep with Mecole Hardman. Try to threaten maybe, you know, again, maybe a little more all over the field. That's the idea, at least when you grab a guy in the second round and Sky Moore. I think the idea is to be, they say it every year, but I think this year they actually mean it, be a little more balanced. Not necessarily in run pass options, but more so in trying to threaten the entire field every single play. I do think that you're probably going to see a little bit more in terms of lining up under center, a little more play action stuff, a few more boots, that type of thing. This actually started last year down the stretch. You saw that more from the Chiefs. They saw a little more 12 personnel. Saw them trying to take advantage of what teams were giving them. And they really became very efficient at dinking and dunking their way down the field. People forget that because of the way the season ended, the disastrous second half in the AFC Championship. But overall, in the second half of the season, they had kind of figured out the secret sauce, and I think you're going to see more of that as long as teams keep playing them that way. And I think teams are going to keep playing them that way because the moment they stop, the moment they try to revert to some of this, you know, the cover three stuff, some of the single high stuff, it's going to be like what happened to the Raiders or the Steelers last year when they insisted on running their usual looks and Mahomes just destroyed them.
Text just came out from Adam Schefter. We'll break away from this offensive conversation. Let's go back to the defense. Adam Schefter says free agent defensive lineman Carlos Dunlap is visiting the Chiefs tonight, per source. You got a reaction to that? I know you haven't done an intensive film study, Kaiser style, yet on him, but what's your reaction to this news?
So you're not going to believe me, but I swear it's true. I've actually looked at some of Carlos Dunlap's snaps.
Okay.
Because he is one of the guys that after the draft and after kind of the free agency frenzy dust settled, he was a guy that I said, here's a guy that you can grab. Here is a guy who last year wasn't a great pass rusher, but he was competent in a more reduced role, similar to what they did with Melvin Ingram last year. And so I think that would be a great idea. And it's, again, similar to the same analysis as Ingram last year. It's not because you're bringing in a Von Miller, but it's because you lack competent bodies at the position and you've got hundreds of snaps that you need to figure out. And if you can bring in even a guy who can do it on a rotational level and be competent with it, which Dunlap was last year, that's a win for the team. So I think it would be a terrific idea for them to bring him on board.
All right. I do too. I think there's still juice left in that tank. I've seen enough to think that he can still go. And I don't think the number is going to be real big that you're going to have to give for it.
Only had two starts last year. Played all 17 games with only two starts. Still had 8.5 sacks. So.
Mm-hmm.
And that matters. And you see, it just makes such a difference. And you and I talked about this so many times last year after Ingram came on board, that complementary pass rush matters so much. Yet that's why the Rams were so aggressive getting Von Miller, even though they had Aaron Donald already, and they had other good pass rushers. Every body you add, it has an exponential effect on the pass rush. It's not just about that one guy. And so adding one more competent body would just be fantastic news for the pass rush.
How much better could the pass rush be just by the fact that Chris Jones is not splitting time at D end and he's focused on doing? Listen, I don't knock what they tried. They tried it, and you know,
sure.
Chris Jones wanted to do it. So, you know, indulging one of your star players that you know is one of the leaders on the team, I don't think is a bad thing. So this isn't like what the hell was this, but it didn't work clearly because they quit doing it. So how much of an uptick could we expect from a Chris Jones that's fully devoted to the D tackle position?
I think you might see an uptick from him statistically, just based on that alone, because that is where he's at his best. He was a good pass rusher from the edge. He's just so good from the three tech. And I remember you talking about that before the season when they were going through this, and you said some version of, why would you do this? Why would you move a guy who's so great at that? And it proved prophetic. I think you might see some uptick statistically. The biggest thing for him, though, in terms of statistics, because that's what most fans are going to be looking for, right, are the sacks and maybe to a lesser extent hits and some pressures. I think that's going to matter what happens around him, by and large. Sacks are kind of, not entirely, but a little bit about luck. And that's why they vary so much year to year, especially for defensive tackles. So the biggest thing that's going to matter is, can Frank Clark be competent this year? Can Karlaftis come in and be a competent rusher? I think that's where you'll see that uptick come in terms of sacks. That's where you see the transition from, you know, wins against offensive linemen, and then they turn more into pressures, hits, and sacks because the quarterback doesn't have anywhere else to go.
And listen, sack is oftentimes credited to just one person, but it takes that whole front to get it, right? Chris Jones gets a sack because Frank Clark is winning around the edge. The quarterback steps up right next to Chris Jones, where he just throws a paw around him and brings him down, right? Chris Jones... collapses the pocket and the quarterback can't step up, and the guy, you know, Karloftis or whoever else off the edge is able to, you know, center him up, right? The tackle's blocking him to a spot that now was supposed to be up past him, but now, you know, he's blocking him right into the quarterback. You know, that's right. The complementary nature. It's why football's the ultimate team game on both sides of the ball. And I think, you know, like I said, I don't think he's going to be 75% better than he was. I think Chris Jones graded like fifth or sixth best amongst defensive tackles last year at PFF, so he did fine. But, you know, if the sun's 10% brighter, we're all dead, right? So if he can improve by
– yes.
I'm not calling him the sun, by the way. But if he improves by 10%, I do think that would be significant. You know, if it's just, and it's
absolutely.
not that he did anything wrong. It's just if now his yep. techniques are in, you know, just his focus being solely on one position, he gets 10% better than last year. That'll make a big deal, make a big difference in their pass rush.
Absolutely, and that's something that I'm assuming they're hoping for. He's in a weird year in his contract where it's like a $29 million cap hit or something, and then next year is the final year of his deal. So I mean, this is a big deal. And you made it's a good analogy, really. It doesn't take much of an uptick in something at the NFL level for the improvement to be substantial. Like 5 or 10% is a much bigger uptick than people realize in terms of what it can do to affect consistency. And that's what matters the most, right? Not a highlight here and there, but what's happening on a snap-by-snap basis. And so that would be huge for the defense if he even had, you know, a 5% uptick from last year, and then they're able to just surround him with just one more competent body. I'm stoked about Dunlap if that happens. Just, again, one more competent body. I'm glad I was on with you when that happened.
Yeah, that is great. And I think he'd be a great fit for this team. I'm with you on that. And to your point about Chris Jones and his contract, $27 million is his cap hit in 23. Like this year it's $29 million, but he's $36 million to cut. So he's not going anywhere. Next year, though,
right.
$27 million cap hit, $7 million to cut. He becomes significantly cheaper. It's a $20 million savings to cut him. Now, I don't think the Chiefs will want to cut him after this year, being that he's still only 28 years old. He should still have a very productive year this year and one more, now going into his 30s after that. But if he has a big year, the incentive is there to rework, throw away that last year of the deal, rework it, make it team friendly, bring that cap number down, and extend it out by 2 or 3 years. This is essentially a contract year for Chris Jones.
In a lot of ways, for sure. I mean, it really is. It's like the contract year before the contract year, because like you said, that dead money hit and their ability to be flexible with it, that's what really matters there. And it gives them a lot of flexibility. Now, do I think that they would – I think it would be a tough conversation because of the level he plays at to cut him even for those kind of savings. But it would definitely be a conversation. And that – it gives the team a little bit of leverage to go to him and say, hey, let's figure something out long term. He's a guy that he wouldn't get cut. I mean, he would get traded, right? If you couldn't figure out something long term, it would be similar to what happened with Tyreek Hill.
Right.
And that's what happens with elite-level players that you can't necessarily fit into your plan long-term with the salary cap. It would be a bummer for the Chiefs to lose two guys of elite caliber for that long-term, but that's going to be it'll be a conversation because you could get not the same haul that you got for Hill because of age and position, but you could get a haul for Chris Jones, and that'll be the reality of the conversation. It won't be Chris Jones versus just the cap number. It would be Chris Jones versus cap number and potential return on a trade, just like it was with Hill. My guess is they get something done, but that's definitely – it's a big year for him.
A couple things to like about Carlos Dunlap. One, he's number 30 on the PFF rankings for the edge defenders, 64 starting edges. He ranks 30, so that puts him in the top half of starting edge rushers, even, you know, at a – 32-year-old season he played in last year. He'll be 33 this year. And he wears number 8, at least he did last year with the Seahawks, so it'll continue the trend of having a funky numbered defensive lineman that Melvin Ingram brought to the Chiefs and we savor so.
Oh, I'm excited about that. Melvin Ingram messed with my mind multiple times before I got used to it. Just the most massive corner I'd ever seen in my life for that Packers game before I kind of, my brain caught up with me.
I'm like, what is this fat-ass DB doing? Oh, wait, that's Melvin Ingram. Like every
up that guy.
There was a check yourself moment all the time. Now it'll be like, who brought the fat kid quarterback out onto the defensive? Oh, wait a minute. Hang on. That's Dunlap. My bad. And he's not fat or anything, but and neither was Ingram. But just you, that number look, it looks funny when a guy, a defensive line thickness is trotting around at 24. Yeah. And when you, eight, maybe the college, we've seen that a little bit more. Maybe it won't be. But I was, you know, we're doing our dynasty, hit the buzzer or whatever you want to do. They get mad at me when I mention my football, my fantasy football. But I was doing, we're doing our dynasty draft, and Virginia had a tight end. I think he's playing for the Jets. I got drafted by the Jets, and he wore zero at Virginia. So, you know, I'm doing my Seth Kaiser film study, and I'm watching this 6'7", 270-pound tight end run around wearing zero. And I was like, that is the oddest-looking thing. Like, zero is just freaky to me. Like, when they brought that back a couple of years ago in college football, I was like, this just looks funny. This doesn't look right, right? This isn't you know, the NBA here. You know, this is an Orlando Woolridge running around with a zero on his back on a tank top. This is a 270-pound tight end. It just, I was watching the video, and I'm like, I don't know that I can draft this guy wearing that number.
24 is going to go from a defensive lineman to a wide receiver this year. Sky Moore is wearing 24.
Right.
Yeah.
And I keep seeing going, who is that?
I'm rooting for Sky. I'm rooting for Sky Moore. I think he's got a terrific skill set to pop maybe early. We'll see how it goes. He's got a great skill set. I love his college film. But that's going to really screw with my mind.
Yes.
Anytime you see a 24 catch the ball when the offense is on the field, your instant reaction is, no, because it's a pick.
Yeah.
And I'll get used to it at some point, I'm sure.
I was doing Sunday Sound Off, and they had the highlights of the East-West high school game Mick Schaefer had, and the quarterback was wearing 87. And I couldn't help it. I was like, boo, like, no, that just looks wrong. Just looks terribly, horribly, horribly wrong. Let's get to our University of Kansas Health System Final Four with Seth Kaiser from his Chief in the North newsletter. The University of Kansas Health System, I don't know if you folks know this, they're the official healthcare provider of the Royals and the Chiefs. If you've got an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System, they can see you quickly. Walk-in clinic, 435 and all. Take it from the Spikers. Easiest, fastest way to get seen. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this. Have you bought a Mega Millions ticket?
I have not. I'm assuming it's up to an absurdly high number right now.
$1.025 billion. So my next question is, now that I've brought you up to speed, how many tickets will you be buying?
Well, you know me. I'm a pretty hardcore Baptist, so I think I'll burst into flame if I try to buy one.
Okay.
But that said, probably about 50. It's worth it. For $1 billion, I'll take some flames.
What could you do to the church and the community if you won $1 billion? A lot.
A whole lot more than with not $1 billion.
That's right. There you go. All right, who will be the Chiefs' leading receiver out of the wideouts? No tight end involved.
Sure. I think Juju Smith-Schuster. I think people are forgetting he's 25. People talk about him like he's washed.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot there. And the Chiefs clearly feel like he fits because they, for 2 years, they chased him. So they clearly like the way he matches up with what they want to do. And finally, can you tell me, what is the difference between a niche and a niche? Niches and niches?
And sneeches.
A niche is spelled N-I-C-H-E, but I think niche is spelled the same way. Is that just a pronunciation issue?
Well, I think so. You use the term niches. Well, he fits a certain niche, and I just I
enjoyed
it.
Think it was Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, Dr. Seuss had his sneeches.
Sneeches.
Yeah. You're
I like this. Have I been pronouncing this wrong my whole life?
No, I think I think your pronunciation is the European pronunciation, and which you know, we know the strong European influence of northern Minnesota, so that would make sense.
Indeed. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. No, that does. That's why I spell theater R-E, you know?
Yeah. No, it's cultured. I'm impressed. Seth, great talking football with you. Can't wait to do it every week, my friend. You're the best.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. The Blue Jays scored 28 runs against the Red Sox this past Friday night. Who was the last team before them to put 28 on the board?
Them.
It goes all the way back.
Same team.
To 2020, the Braves beat the Marlins 29-9. Did you remember that game?
No.
29-9. It's only the sixth time in Major League history a team has scored 28 runs. The record, the Rangers beat the Orioles 30-3 on August 22nd, 2007.
Sounds like some beer league softball scores.
It did. 10 in the eighth, 6 in the ninth in that game.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, what we were playing for, gets you some great Joe's right now. Joe'sKC.com. You can also send it anywhere around the country. I'm telling you, if you're in sales, there is no better way to spiff a client than to send us some wonderful Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. And, of course, the Kansas City Barbecue store. I'm headed over for some fuel myself for my Traeger cooker. Yeah. The fuel, the sauces, the rubs, the grill, the cooker itself, even the meat. It's all right there at Kansas City Barbecue Store, 119th and Strang Line Road. Our thanks to Seth Kaiser joining us in our last segment. There was one I wanted to mention. We're going to run out of time.
It happens.
You know what?
He said it was a big Wednesday.
Has Dravetta ever managed a clock worse than he did today?
Probably not.